call the meeting to order. Today, we're going to go over the Department of Natural Resources outcomes budgeting for results. And members, what we are going to be thinking about this morning as we hear this is where we're going to do cuts. So it's as simple as that, and people may want to ask questions with that in mind, or with anything else in mind. I think one of the things I want to note that we have company today, and that's folks from the SWCDs. Thank you all for coming. And we will begin. Welcome, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Today, we're going to go through kind of everything that has occurred budget-wise since the biennial budget was passed last session up until the release of the governor's supplemental budget earlier this week. So when the budget that you all had recommended and worked with the Senate, signed into law with the governor, was passed, it contained an $800,000 general fund reduction that the department was to do internally, give us the flexibility to deal with that reduction. I'm going to outline the impacts of that reduction on our spreadsheet, on our outcome budget spreadsheet. After that, also in June, we were given directions to do about a 3% unallotment that occurred. That decision, it was about approximately $1,475,000. That amount is also shown on these spreadsheets. That it's the same format we used last year that we developed to talk about 08-09 and what we're proposing to do in 10 and 11. Those two impacts in the department's aspect, and I think in all of state government, are a done deal. Those monies have been gone. The governor's budget does ask you to ratify that decision. So we're going to talk about that in the past tense, if that's okay, because these decisions, we've been operating under these dollars, if you want, since June or July. The governor's budget does contain about another 3% reduction and then some natural resource reductions one time, but we're going to get through this. I think, Madam Chair, it's your intent to try to talk about the present and then talk about the governor's supplemental budget proposal sometime at a later date, as soon as possible.
Yeah, that will be, members, that will be soon, probably next week. We are not meeting tonight. I had wanted us to meet tonight and hear from Bowser, but we will, just because of floor scheduling, that's not what we're going to be doing. However, I would ask you to note for your schedules that we will probably be meeting in the evening next week. Just keep that in mind, because we are going to get this under our belt quickly.
And Madam Chair, we will do whatever we can to get you the most up-to-date current information and the most useful information possible. So please, if any members have questions or are looking for something that we don't have, let me know and we'll get that to you in a fashion that's readable. We're working on three separate summary documents as well. I've handed out draft copies to staff, fiscal staff, that outline the three separate actions that we have taken. So you don't need to use this as your only document. I'll have different papers that talk about the three different cuts that took place as well. With that, Madam Chair, I'm just going to move right ahead in the presentation. One of the things that was passed in the law last year required us to put some information on the website, so I want to show you where that's located. And actually, what's on the web is this entire table, our budgeting for results, performance-based spreadsheet. And we tried to put all of our legislative presentations on there as well, and all of our fact sheets, so people can see, get copies of what we have, what we're presenting to you at real time and what they are. As we develop our performance-based management system, we talked about this a little bit, but I just wanted to remind you that it's really an adaptive management process. We have a plan. We get our budgets enacted by the legislature, signed into law. We take that into effect. We get them working. We adapt as things come up, such as these changes we had to do within the budget system. But really, we're doing all of this within the context of our missions and goals, looking at the trends that are out there in strategic directions, our program and legislative objectives, and also doing that and measuring where we are. Performance management targets is something that we take really seriously so we can maximize the dollars that we have, because we all know they are precious. The accessibility of budget information that we do have, and Manager, we were doing this before we were asked to do this, so transparency may not always be the easiest with a web page of over 1,200 direct pages to it, but we try to do the best we can to make sure people can find what they have. I myself use the search function on our website more than anything else. So, but this is under our About DNR heading under budgets. You can see we have the FY 10-11 biennial operation budget, operating budget. We also have the past three bienniums, 04, 05, 06, 07, 08, 09, capital bonding documents, gaming fish fund, our VOC documents, reports that are there, and our natural resource annual reports. Then we also have a page that talks about where the money's come from, where the funds are spent, and then division spending by program, lands and minerals, et cetera, through enforcement operations support. And then you can actually download a complete copy of our biennial operating budget off of this website as well. So we try to keep it up to date and with the most current information. And if you check on our legislative web page, which is a link back from this budget information, like I said, we have all the presentations and things like that as well. And if you do call Andre Paul's here in the audience, she's one of the people that help us make sure all this stuff works and adds up right. So I do appreciate her and her staff's help in getting this up, but I think that if you go to this website, you'll be satisfied with the information we have and that we are meeting the statutory requirements under this section. Madam Chair, now I'm going to move into the actual spreadsheet that we have. And this is, I'm going to do the best I can to work through this document on the monitors as well. The way this is laid out, we took what we had last year. We talked about 08-09. We talked about 10 and 11, what we were proposing in the governor's budget at that time. And then now we've taken and added those two actions that I spoke of earlier, the $800,000 reduction and the 1.475 on allotment. You're going to see those two actions on the top of each division on the first two lines here. So on page one, it says lands and minerals. The box right underneath that white box, FY 10 and 11 appropriations, direct, statutory, and open. This doesn't include PILT, so that's the total there with that taken off. And then the summary of changes to FY 10 and 11 appropriations. This is those two actions separated out. So you can see the $800,000 that was passed into law gave us the flexibility to deal with that reduction internally. Look at things strategically, how can we reduce costs and things like that. And then also the unallotment. So I'm going to focus on that, those two boxes, Madam Chair, by division, and then touch on some of the highlights of the outcomes. And if we need more detail, please let me know if that's not working for us. So for lands and minerals, you can see the FY 10-11 appropriation total was a little bit over, almost $24 million, $23,752,000. And then the allotments, you can see there, the FY 10 and 11 on allotment in June was $30,000. And those costs are going to be achieved annually from salary savings. As we went through and looked at our budget and the reductions that we had to take place, we looked at vacancies, salary savings, retirements, the combination of those, combining positions sometimes, doing reclassifying and rewriting PDs perhaps in some cases. So we really looked at what we had and how can we operate differently, and all of that is kind of comprised under the salary savings piece that you'll see throughout the document. There's also reductions that I'll talk about that are general management activities. How do we travel? How do we purchase things? Things of that nature. Things that we can reduce within our budget without having a huge impact on our missions and goals, being the ability to achieve that. So the $800,000 reduction, we did not apply any of that to lands and minerals under those two actions. So realistically, to date, from the budget that was passed last year, lands and minerals has seen a $30,000 reduction. you can see the outcomes. So that brings that expended, the budget from $23,752,000 to $23,692,000, where we're currently operating right now. Then you can see the chief or the strategic objectives that we have listed, minerals management, managing minerals activities on the almost 12 million acres of state-owned mineral rights that we have is very important to us. And then if you go to the far right under the outcome descriptions, 123 total bids for 112 mining units were let out for our exploratory mining, metallic mineral lease sale, I should say. The highest bids covered 47,000 acres in the lease sale area. There's a lot of information there, Madam Chair. I don't know if you want me to go through each of those areas specifically or just highlight some of them.
I think as members, you don't have to read it all, but as we go through it, members, instead of waiting and going back, ask questions as we go. And if it takes us too much time, we're going to meet next week in the evening anyway. But I do want folks to understand this perfectly well. So, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, I'm just kind of curious, as we go through this, can you tell us how you're managing cash flow, for instance? Are you borrowing from other funds, or how is this working in within the DNR? Because that's kind of the overreaching question that we have in every area of the budget this year. And when we're making cuts, we're really looking at a deficit in the next biennium. So as we make cuts this year, we really have to be planning for that, because our economist is telling us that times are not getting better and probably won't be getting better for a long time. So how do you manage your cash flow? I guess I'm just curious about that. Do you use other funds? And then a second part of another question, well, no, answer that, and then I've got another question for you as well.
All right. Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, that's a good question, because cash flow for the state in general is becoming a very important issue, as we need to have the ability to pay our daily bills, and the receipts coming in sometimes don't often match up like that. The DNR, we receive our general fund cash flow from MMB. So when the state has money to pay their bill, I mean, it all flows through the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget through the financial services there. I think maybe what you're thinking of is the dedicated funds that we have. Are we borrowing against those? And the answer is no. I mean, we aren't using Game and Fish Fund dollars today to pay off a bill and repay the Game and Fish Fund. We just can't do that. The way those accounts are set up, there is no flexibility to borrow from one account to pay off something and then repay it. So as much as we are an integrated agency, our funding sources really direct our work, and those cash deposits have to stay within those accounts for those specific purposes, unless the statutes were changed and the purposes of those accounts were changed to allow that flexibility to occur.
And then, Mr. Chair, my second question is, there's a citizens committee that oversees the DNR budget, and I've had a chance to visit with a few of those folks, and I'm wondering, can you tell us how they were created, and are they part of the process as you go through your budget? And I'm not sure what the name of that citizens committee is. It's an oversight committee, and I don't know the exact name. Maybe you could tell the rest of the committee what they're called, how and why they were created, and if they're part of this process.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, the committee you're talking about is the Citizens Budget Oversight Committee, and specifically they just deal with the dedicated funds, primarily the Game and Fish Fund. So we have subgroups from enforcement, from wildlife, ecological resources, and also fisheries that meet. They review the expenditures from those specific accounts that are for those purposes. So, for example, the wildlife subcommittee talks about deer licenses, bear licenses, moose licenses, the deer management account, things like that, the deer bear surcharge. You have the duck and the pheasant committees look at the stamps that they have, the waterfowl and the small game committees look at the stamps, that the revenues associated with those specific categories. We do not have a group of people looking at the general fund, so to speak. On the other side, the natural resources side of it, we meet with individual user groups on a quarterly basis. The off-highway vehicle groups, the motorcycles, the four-wheelers, the ATV groups, the snowmobile groups, the horseback riders, the cross-country skiers. We're meeting with all of these groups that have license fees on a quarterly basis, talking to them about account stabilization, what the health of the account is, current appropriations, activities that are going on within the account. So there's a bunch of smaller groups. Then on the game and fish fund side of things, there's a member from each of those subgroups that are appointed to be part of the larger budget oversight committee. So it's a bunch of small, it's a bunch of subcommittee work, and then roughly monthly during the spring, winter and spring, the larger full committee meets.
And the larger full committee then does look at this budget?
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, they would look at the budget related to
only their area.
Accounts. Okay. Madam Chair, thank you. I'll move forward. Under lands and minerals, you can see the mine land reclamation.
Excuse me for a second. We're going to have one more question first. Representative Ansel.
Just a general comment at this stage in this, what's going to be a really grueling process. Mm-hmm. And the Citizens Commission comment is what prompts me to say this. At a minimum, those activities in the department that lead to job creation and retention and development have to be prioritized. And you might as well know now my bias is going to be forestry and mining, because that's where we get the development quickest. That's where we retain and create some jobs to get us out of this terrible, terrible hole we're in here. So I hope you all will join me as we embark on this journey and try to emphasize those things as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Anzels, I appreciate that comment, because the slide I didn't show that you've all seen many times before are the three circles that interjoin: the recreation, the economic development, and the environmental protection. The difficult mission of the department is balancing those three circles. And in this tough time, that economic development and economic driver piece is one that we need to keep going and manage the other circles as well. We're also looking at and thankful for the bonding dollars that are there in the bonding proposal for state park development, trail rehab and repair, facility asset preservation. Those are jobs that we will be spending those dollars as soon as possible and getting them out on the ground, a lot of them up in your neck of the woods. So we appreciate and understand you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's to Representative Van Zelk's point. Commissioner, in regards to the non-ferrous mining in northern Minnesota, I couldn't help but look and see Mr. Vadas in the audience. And unfortunately, Representative Hausman and I have a bill that would move that discussion to the committee process, and unfortunately, we haven't had a hearing yet. Along the lines of Representative Van Zelk, I think the DNR actually may have all the tools already in the toolbox to move this forward, but we're not sure. We want adequate financial assurance so this can move forward. But in this time when Governor Pelini's proposed to cut your department 6%, I'm just kind of curious, can you tell me how many people are working now in Minnesota, northern Minnesota, in these good paying jobs, just to look at the possibility, and how many would be working there if we got this thing off first base and moved it forward?
Madam Chair, Representative McMurray, I don't have that information. We'll do the best that we can to get that for you. That'd probably be a better question to ask some of those groups, the non-ferrous mining association, those types of people. I don't know what the projected numbers are, and I don't even want to care to guess what they are. I know it has a substantial impact not only at the facility, but the trickle-down or the pass-through effect of those jobs as well.
Well, Madam Chair, I think you answered what I wanted to make my point. we should have a hearing and find out so we can put this thing behind us and move it forward. This is really, really important to northern Minnesota, to Representative Ann's Elk District. It goes all the way over to Tamarack, Minnesota, in the peat country, where we have an unbelievably opportunity there in a depressed economy area. We're currently, like 20 people have rented some storefront space and are working in that community. We should be having that discussion, members, and I hope you all are pushing that issue forward, because it's wrong not to have a hearing and have the discussion that we should have about this process. We want adequate economic assurances, but in this tough time, when this department's preparing for another 6% cut, I'd be curious to know what Mr. Vadas has got to say about the opportunity that he's been negotiating on our behalf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to get us off track here, and I'm sorry, but Representative McNamara, the real jobs won't be created until we're fully permitted and operational. In the meantime, the jobs are held by lawyers, lobbyists, consultants, and everybody involved peripherally in trying to get these projects permitted. But this will be a boom in northeastern Minnesota if the permit process is allowed to develop as we hope it will.
Right. If you would continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Representative Doty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in the same vein of these miserable economic times, in another aspect of the DNR, the protection of resources, other than ownership, are you looking at other things that we can do besides outright purchasing of property to protect it? What other things are we doing that maybe aren't going to be so expensive?
Madam Chair, Representative Doty, we look at a whole lot of other things besides ownership to do those types of activities. Of course, ownership is not only a fee title, but easement as well. Minnesota Forest for the Future program, the Forest Legacy, however you want to look at it, is a huge success. The ACUB buffers in your area are certainly a great program as well. I'm going to talk a little bit about our community assistance program, which in the metro region or in our central region of the state, we don't own a lot of land. We need to work with landowners and local government units to instill that ethic, that conservation priority within them as well. We can't do it all ourselves, the state, the department. We need to make sure that local units of government, counties, townships, landowners understand the importance and the benefits of conservation, of proper land management and stewardship, and be lead by example kind of types of activities. So there's a lot of things that are out there. And as you go through this phase of the budget that we're in, I hope you can see that we did try to come up with a thoughtful and a systematic process to allow us to continue to do those things to the best of our ability. So there's a lot of tools. We try to maintain as many of them as we can. And it wasn't an easy task for us to get to this point in time. Madam Chair.
Representative Dill has a question.
I can't let the McNamara comments go without having some retort to that. The non-ferrous folks, the Director of Lands and Minerals, the department, others have been in numerous committees and testified in the quantities and amounts and the types of jobs and the amounts that they've earned, that they will earn, what it means to school trust lands, what it means to fee lands, what it means to fee holders, what it means to the U.S. Forest Service and all of the affected landowners in terms of royalties, etc. And I just want to make sure that no one believes that we have to have a bill here in the Minnesota legislature that passes and is signed into law that will allow this project to go forward, because there are adequate laws and assurance parameters in place today, and the department has been before this committee and others and stated that over and over and over again, that there are the proper rules and laws in place today to govern this project. And I want to say it one more time. There is no requirement to have any additional legislation to allow any of the non-ferrous mining projects at this point to go forward.
I think that that is a debate that is going to probably happen in the Environment Policy Committee, because there are obviously two different opinions here. My opinion on the budget is that we are going to continue with the next piece, which is number two.
All right, man, I'm trying to do my best to get us back on track here. So, just a couple highlights on our lands and minerals. The mine land reclamation, of course, that's a very important process and work priority for us. Environmental review, lease administration, mine permitting.
Let me just, on that point, you have the budget for the mine land reclamation group, and you have a mix of outcomes, and one of them is provide technical assistance. Why isn't that charged back to the permittee or the person asking for the permit?
Madam Chair, members, it is. It needs to be corrected on here. Those activities, the environmental review activities, we have a contractual relationship with Polymet, for example. They're paying the costs of the staff people who are working on that.
Okay, but from this outcomes description, it looks like this money is being used to pay for that.
And I can provide some more clarification on that, Madam Chair.
I think we do need to understand that.
There are pieces of it that are not, that we need to provide as an agency in the preparation of that, but the actual preparation of the document itself is under contract. We have a working agreement with Polymet, and we can talk about more about that, what it is and what's not in there.
I think I want you to split this up, just as I'm going to ask you to split up the real estate management in a minute, so that people can understand what it is, how much we're paying on permits for current and future permits, and how much is reclamation of past mines that where we didn't have money for reclamation. So I think we need some more information in this one, because one of our themes is going to be, since we don't have general fund money, we cannot be doing subsidies where it's inappropriate to do subsidies. Would this committee agree with that? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing I am looking for right now.
Madam Chair, we will do that. One of the complexities with a document of this size and this detail is trying to figure out how much information at what point in time. So those types of facts will help us get you what you need in a timely fashion. So, and that comment on making sure that the general fund isn't subsidizing certain activities, we take wholeheartedly with you, and we're doing a lot of things to deal with that. We're also looking at where the general fund was paying for activities that could be paid for from another source of funding, and we'll get into that as well a little bit. So
that is where this committee does need to go.
Next, that brings us into the real estate management, because now some of these real estate costs are being paid for by the divisions and being supported by the funds that are being used to acquire those lands, because it is part of the transaction costs. Bonding, for example, other funds where the direct activities relate to those funding sources and are appropriate, we're covering those costs back that way. And that'll be in our detailed information for you how that's done. But just a couple things to highlight. In FY09, we completed more than 108 acquisitions for over 8,000 acres and acres of fee and conservation easements for $21.9 million. So I know people often wonder where we're at. We've acquired and done more transactions in the past 2 years than we probably have done than the previous eight. So we are ramping up, and we're dealing with that pressure and that demand in an expedited fashion. I think we can put the numbers together to show that you would support that as well.
Okay. So what we need to make sure is when we are purchasing lands and you give us a budget for to purchase a piece of land, it includes the transaction cost. Similarly, when an outside group comes to you and says, DNR, we want you to purchase this land, all of those transaction costs are included with what they're bringing forward. Is that a common understanding here?
Madam Chair, yes.
And members, I trust you agree with that's the way we should be doing business here. So that's, it's hard from here to understand. Let's understand here how much of this land is initiated by the legislature and how much is initiated from the outside. And let's make sure, and I want to make sure that there is approval by the DNR for each of those lands before. Are these things that you can give us a little more clarity on at some point?
Madam Chair, yes, because we have changed dramatically the way we do business on some of those activities, the third-party transactions. We do seek approval. We're working at the field level to make sure that organizations understand what is a priority for us, where we want to be acquiring lands. And we have processes set up so they know exactly what they have to do and who pays for what and things of that nature. So we can prepare a little fact sheet or something like that on that whole land acquisition.
I think that's important process. Because I have heard so much conversation about it coming from all directions. Not coming from just one direction, but coming from all directions. So I think that would be helpful. Members, is that something that would be helpful to you?
Madam Chair, lastly in this section, I just want to highlight our lands record management system and thank you for your continued support. At some point in time, I would hope I would have the ability to show you kind of our working model at this point in time. This will bring our management of lands and the information that we have into like the 23rd century, I think, compared to where we are right now, showing all of these activities from a desktop module. And once we get it up and running, it will be accessible to citizens of the state as well. So we're anticipating that to roll out next June or July. It still has a substantial amount of work left to do with it, but I think I'll probably throw it on my laptop and come by and show a couple of you of it, because I think you'd be extremely impressed with where we're at and how we're moving our land management systems forward. If there's no other questions, I'm going to move in the Division of Waters, Madam Chair. And again, most of the 10 and 11 budgeted expenditures outcomes we talked about already, these haven't changed that much from last session, but we have them there to remind you where we're at. Total Waters budget that was passed in last May was $46,536,000. A lot of that was other sources. I mean, that's direct statutory open. If you look at the summary changes columns of the June unallotment of the $11.45 million in general fund appropriations, $183,154 was unallotted, with $84,000 of that being achieved through that general management appropriation, salary, staffing, fuel, fleet, those types of savings. $99,154 and $97,511 were taken from the Stream Loan Protection Account. This was a revolving loan account that was established by the legislature several years ago, with funds coming in back for the funds that were paid out. So we've unallotted those payments that were coming back into the account. You can see there's no funding no longer available for this program, and there's no pending requests for the loans. Of the general fund reduction.
Hang on for a second.
Yes.
If you add up 99 and 99 and 84, it's more than. Where'd the rest of this money go?
Madam Chair, the $99,154 mm-hmm. and the $84,000 equals at $183,154 for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
I think where we're actually short is the second year, and it's just a rounding error on our part, I'm assuming, is that $99,154 went to $97,500. So we're actually shy, a little bit less than $2,000 there.
Okay.
So for the second year, it's actually $84,000 and $97,500 rather than that $99,154. So I'll correct that.
Okay.
It's just I
get it.
It's an error on our part, and I do apologize. It is rather difficult trying to manage all of these numbers at this level. The general fund reduction, $800,000, we looked at realigning of our community assistance programs, being shifting from the regional operations to the Division of Ecological Resources and Waters that we're working on right now. You can see it enables the department to better coordinate and manage this work and ensure that these activities are in strategic alignment with the creation of the new division. What we did is we had $180,000 in general fund flood hazard reduction work that we put this funding, this program into that funding, and our flood damage reduction work now is just all based upon the bonding dollars that we receive and other federal funds that are associated with it.
So we're moving to borrowing to backfill this 180.
And I'm sure we're just shifting our flood hazard program to work with the funding sources that are there right now. Corps of Engineers, federal funding dollars that we receive for the program, and also past and current bonding appropriations.
Representative Doty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How's the demand compared to the money supply for grants in that area?
Do we have hazard reduction?
Generally in the whole protection, water protection area, but specifically that, do we have more people lined up for these grants? Do we have lots of applications coming in compared to the amount available? And
it depends how much money we get. Representative, we've identified a large amount of need currently for flood hazard program dollars. I think it's about $50 million right now, right around there. We can have Kent Lockesmo come down and talk more directly to this point, if you'd like, Madam Chair.
No, I think I would like to have him give just the members a few words about this, because this is a bill, the legislature, maybe you can give us some, because members are going to be hearing more about this. Tell us kind of on average what money you have been getting over the past and what you're asking for in bonding this year.
Madam Chair, members, Kent Lockesmo, Director of Division of Waters. We have had the dollars that Commissioner Meyer was referring to was the general fund grant program for flood hazard mitigation. We've had in that program about $200,000 a year for the last few years. And that only goes for these small projects or the project development because it's general fund monies. In bonding, and those are limited to small projects under $200,000 maximum cost. So the larger projects then fall into bonding, and we've had significant demand for those dollars. We've in recent years, last year we got $53.8 million in bonding. The year before, I believe, it was $33.9. So there's been a lot of money that's gone towards projects. We have about $150 million worth of requests right now for the large projects. For small projects, the ones that this money would directly affect, we haven't had a lot of requests for that.
Okay, so you're talking about $150 million of requests from bonding, plus then if we do a diversion project around Moorhead, Fargo-Moorhead, that's going to be those dollars are going to be on top of that. Am I getting that?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So this, members, is going to be a large amount of money. Just so you... Okay. Any other questions for members?
Madam Chair, I'll continue on with the Division of Waters. Those two actions make up for the budget reductions that have occurred to date on this division. The rest of this document talks about our priorities and the example indicators. One of the things I think we're going to come back and talk about is the status of the shoreland rules. At some point in time, I've been talking with staff about that. We can certainly talk about that. Water supply management, I think we talked about groundwater monitoring. Some of the reports that are out there, we'll continue to talk about that in the future as well. That is an important area for us, making sure that we are appropriating the right amount of water and knowing how much water we have. We have been fortunate in this state to not have to deal with water issues like some other states, but that will not always be the case. So we need to maintain and expand our knowledge of our water resources wherever possible.
Representative Anderson.
And that feeds into that hydrologic information for decision-making, the last block here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Groundwater monitoring wells and things of that nature.
Mr. Meyer?
Yes.
I'm wondering, I see that you have wells that are being sealed. Are those wells that can't be used for the monitoring purposes of the water?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, these would be wells that don't fit our monitoring needs. For example, there may be too much diversion being drawn from the aquifer at that point in time. Our monitoring system needs, we have certain criteria that we have to have for an accurate, statistically accurate monitoring well to be there. When we go through and close these wells, they either no longer meet that need or they're no longer serving their actual purpose that they were drilled for.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, so they aren't able to be retrofitted at all, or has that been explored?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, Kent Locksmoke can address some of those technical issues there.
Madam Chair, members, Kent Locksmoke, the wells that we're abandoning are no longer functional for that for the observation well purpose, so we would have to drill a new well. We may be able to use that site and abandon the existing well and drill a new one, 10 feet away.
Is that, Madam Chair, Mr. Locksmoke, is that done then, or?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Madam Chair, members, if there's no other questions, I'll move on to the Division of Forestry.
Okay. Let's concentrate on results that you're getting from Minnesotans so that if folks are listening, they will know exactly what results they're getting for their money. Okay?
I will do my best, Madam Chair. The Division of Forestry annual appropriation in the current biennial budget was $172,606,000. That includes direct statutory open. We need to talk about fire a little bit differently and be aware of that the fire open does exist, but we'll do our best to deal with that issue. The June unallotments are the $18.74 million general fund. The Division of Forestry has $188,000 has been allotted each year. Of that, $135,000 annually through our general management and salary savings activities, spending less supplies, fleet travel. Forestry has a lot, well, their work is in the forest, so there's a lot of travel-related expenses, trying to reduce fuel consumption wherever possible, looking at our fleet, what kind of fleet we have, maintaining that a little bit differently, and then also looking at salary savings through vacancy management and strategically filling positions wherever we can. It's just something we have to do not only in forestry but across the board. There's also a $53,000 annual reduction from the Forest Resources Council. Those monies do go to us, and then the Forest Resources Council is funded under the DNR. The general fund reduction for the $800,000, we shifted the management of our special event recreation activities in the forest to the Division of Parks and Trails. This brought about a savings of $240,000 each year. The events that occurred in the 56 state forest now are managed through the Division of Parks and Trails in those regional and area offices. So this activity was picked up by existing staff to help us deal with that reduction. As you look at the remainder of that budget, then $171,750,000, about 26% of that is expended in or will be expended with related to fire management, talking about fire preparedness, fire prevention, and fire suppression. Out of everything we do in the department, fire and floods are our two top priorities when those two come about. We will go to great lengths and do all we can when a flood occurs to mobilize our staff, our enforcement staff, and others in the field to help protect life and property. And likewise, and when fire season occurs, we are on very high alert. It shifts the work of many of our foresters and other folks. Our fire certified staff are ready to go at a moment's notice, and we drop everything to go to help put out the fire to protect property and lives, not only in Minnesota but also nationwide. were recognized as a leader in providing that support. State land asset management is about 38% of the Department of Forest, Division of Forestry budget. Timber management, silviculture, and roads. It's important to have the road network we need to get in and do the forest work that's out there. Silvicultural activities is 47% of the program, and roads is about 53% of the program. You can see the outcomes that are there. Partially replaced roads that are there. Dealing with other management activities, reinventory, productivity improvements, and transactions. Significant amounts are needed for intermediate stand treatments. Now is the time where we are investing in our forest. It's the proper time to do that. Go through and selectively manage our stands of timber to increase the productivity while also providing a biomass source, some work for people, and getting materials to the mills as well. So we are taking this advantage, this slowdown in the market, to the best of our advantage to improve the productivity of our forest as well.
We have two questions here. Representative Purcell is going to ask the first one, and then Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, just to back up just a little, and I was trying to look ahead here and see if I could get the answer to my question, and I haven't been able to get it out of here, so I'm just going to ask you on that 53,000 reduction the Forest Resources Council. Firstly, I think it'd be maybe a little helpful for, especially for people listening in, what the Forest Resources Council is, and then what does that represent of the total Forest Resource Council budget? What, do we have a number in here for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcell, I don't have that right off the top of my head. I can get that for you, though. I don't want to give you the wrong information. I have a number, but I don't know if it's right or not. So,
just briefly, Forest Resources Council function.
Madam Chair, members, the Forest Resources Council is a group that is established and housed over the University of Minnesota. They provide guidance and recommendation on forest management activities, forest protection activities, and do research and look at peer review things like that. So they've been around for a long time. They've helped us manage our sustainable timber management activities, sustainable forest management statutes. They've been established in statute. We can provide more detail on that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, just a quick pause. So they're kind of the science guys, and your scientists are involved with that council, I presume.
Madam Chair, yes. Director Dave Epperly is kind of works on with the Forest Resource Council.
Yeah. Thank you. Just information on that total budget would be helpful. Thanks.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, can you tell me if the department has a new policy out to close some of these forest roads? Or
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, close them to permanently or close them to certain OHV traffic, or do you provide more information on your question?
Well, you know, I've heard stories, you know, up in northern Minnesota that some of these roads are being closed by officers to timber haulers, and I'm just wondering, is that a policy from the department, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, no, the only time they would be closed is when in the spring breakup. There may be a specific road for a specific person that purpose that this is occurring. I'm not aware of any forest roads that we're closing.
Okay.
This is our network of roads that we need to get, people need to get to their cabins, their houses sometimes, provide recreation. If you have a specific example that you're aware of, please let me know and we'll take a look at it.
We'll talk offline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, briefly, this is a great example of what I was talking about earlier. Forest roads and bridges will be closed when they're not adequately maintained. And when they're closed, our access to timber stands, which grow and retain jobs, is diminished. That's the problem. And this is a great example of what I was trying to get at earlier.
We're going to have real stress in doing these budget cuts.
And Madam Chair, I agree. We have been living in stressful times for quite a while, the department, trying to do the best we can.
Representative Dillon.
Well, on the closure thing, I think the most complaints that I've had, and frankly, most of them are the action taken by the department has been proper, has been over access to cabins during periods of time when the road condition wasn't appropriate. A lot of that has to do with ATVs. And people have had years and years and years of access by different conveyances. And then suddenly when the management strategy on maintaining the roads as the budget started to constrain and we had to do better with less, it started to affect the daily way that people get to their places. And how, but I have not, I don't recall any logging operations contacting me at all regarding their inability because of a road being closed for access, except during breakup, which is, that's been standard operating procedure. So I think it has to do with cabins and ATVs, and we do get those, I do get those calls.
I want Mr. Reinholz to hone in on some of the issues here.
Madam Chair, members, I guess maybe we kind of started the meeting without, kind of jumped into it without necessarily an understanding, I think, of what the intention of the meeting was. And I guess really what we have is the Department of Natural Resources outcome-based budgeting was the plan for today's meeting, not necessary, certainly not to look at the governor's supplemental budget that clearly is not on the table. And I think this continuation of what, this was my request actually to the chair that we have a meeting on this topic. If you recall last year, we were trying to move down the road of outcomes, results-based budgeting. And so kind of wanted, really the idea was not so much of specifics in the changes to the budget that I was hoping would come out of it, but the conversation has been around it. What I've heard on forestry is if we don't do forestry, we're going to close roads, and what you're really saying is there won't be jobs for people up there. So shouldn't that be an outcome in here? If that is what we run the forestry department for, that should be the outcome. How much private activity was generated based on the activity of the DNR forestry department? We shouldn't be talking, the results are not to manage 4.4 million acres of land. That's not the result, I don't believe, that Representative Van Zyl, you're looking for. What you're looking for is, in Representative Dill, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I hear is you want the DNR to run that resource of the state so that it is an economic engine for the northern Minnesota. So what do we need as far as results back? We need the information on how many people are employed in the forestry industry in northern Minnesota. Also, how much money is the state of Minnesota bringing in?
Yes.
In its forestry operations to the state of Minnesota? Is it? Then you have the information you probably would want. Is that where you want to direct limited resources? Do we see that as being, we have limited resources. We're looking at this sheet and we can say, okay, we can give it to the Division of Waters so that they can do permits on waters, or we can take that money and send it down to forestry because if we send them another $1 million, they'll generate $3 million worth of economic activity in northern Minnesota. It's harder to see. It's not on the paper here, but I think that's where the questions are, but we have a system of bringing the information in and utilizing it to come up with the right budget answers. And that's what I was trying to get at. And I mean, we're pushing, and you saw at the PCA, it's a very difficult process. It's a long-term process, but trying to get the budgeting based on goals and results and information, not what we did last year, and the cuts we need to make. This one, the real example to me is, so what are the number of jobs? What is the economic activity? I'm not sure the DNR even has ever been told to do that. But that are the results in this instance we'd be looking at.
And I think maybe directly related to that, what were the timber sales last,
Madam Chair, members, I don't have the direct number on that with me. We'll get that for you. We do have a fact sheet that talks about the economic impact of the forest industry in the state.
Not timber generally. Sales. We need it specifically. What happened last year?
I can get you the number of cords sold. When we sell those cords, they have a period of time to harvest that wood, Madam Chair, and we only receive a portion of the funds as a down payment. So the number of cords sold in any given year do not equal the number of cords harvested or the number of cords that go to market. And those are great questions to have. What we're looking at in the Division of Forestry, for example, state land asset management is just a piece. Fire protection is another huge program activity. We also have cooperative forest management, working with the private landowners. And then our core program support, forest health, utilization, marketing, information, education. So a piece of that activity in forestry does go to drive the economic engine of the wood fiber industry in the state of Minnesota, but it's also protecting, working with private landowners and protecting the lands that we have, managing them for the future. On your point, Mr. Reinholz, of the document that we have and talking about the governor's supplemental budget, the items I'm discussing related to the June unallotment and the $800,000 reduction, those are real. Those are dollars the department does not have anymore. So the budget that I'm presenting with these reductions are what we have to operate on right now. So I apologize if I'm not meeting the needs, or if the June unallotments are represented in the governor's supplemental budget as a ratification item, but we're operating as a department and as an agency without these funds right now. This is reality for us. Is we're $1.475 million less general fund than where we were the budget that you passed, and I'm also trying to bring to mind where we did the $800,000 general fund reduction that the legislature allowed us to manage internally as well. I'm just trying to make the most effective use of the committee's time as possible.
All of this discussion actually, I think, helps us learn what we're supposed to be doing, so I don't regret it at all. But I do think we are going to need to hone in on those big picture outcomes. The jobs, how much timber was sold? What was the sales tax that Minnesota got from that? What was the dividend? So that's for the current. What do we expect from the long-term management? Are we really going to have jobs? Are we really going to have, I mean, what's Canada doing, guys? I mean, so we need to ask some of those questions. But similarly in waters, and we've gone by waters, and what we're missing here is you're saying, well, we should have water for the future. We don't know whether we have enough drinking water for Minnesotans into the future. When you look at drinking water, what industry wants to use, we have no idea. So we need to kind of hone in on that particular outcome. Will industry have enough water? Will we have enough water to drink? We aren't getting there yet. So our activities need to be directed at these big picture things. So we're going to spend some more time on waters, folks, because we have heard one report on that, and I did kind of purposely gloss over it, but we're going to come back to it. So defining our outcomes going forward.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I will provide the committee with the information we do have on timber economic activity and benefits that we have out there. Later on today, I can make sure that you get a copy of that, and we'll provide the other information you're looking for. Okay.
We have to look at this huge input of money, and what does it, is it working? I think that's the basic question. Is it working?
Yeah, and to that point, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Reinholz's point, I think what was helpful, we had MPCA here earlier this week come and talk to us, and what was nice from their presentation is, you know, they gave us the number of staff for each of these areas. They talked about the historical budget, which I think would be helpful for me to see, is where are we, where have we been and where are we going as far as monetary purposes go. And then also I'd just kind of like to know what is the demand on services for each of these divisions too. I think that would be helpful for me in the whole decision-making process. So So if we can get some of that kind of detail, and that's for anybody that comes forward. I thought it was really helpful with what MPCA came forward, and I'd just like to expand on that more, too. So
we're going to have to expand on that. We will be having another hearing, Representative Anderson, on that, too. I mean, it's just... do you want to continue?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just briefly continue with State Land Asset Management. It covers our timber management activities, our civil culture and roads, I believe is where I left off. Forest inventory, making sure that we're re-inventorying and inventorying our current stands, mm-hmm. looking at what we have and doing that in some cyclic period. We're going to try to do 90,000 to 110,000 acres per each year in 10 and 11. Forest certification, maintaining our forest certification standard is a priority to us as well.
And we're maintaining the standards to sell the timber, but the other outcome needs to be, are these forests healthy? Healthy enough to resist invasives?
Madam Chair, that's a part of the certification process, and we are dual certified by two of the major certification organizations that are out there. They look at our timber management activities, our practices, and the actual stand itself, or a representative of the timber stands that we have within the state. And we've received very high marks in every audit that we've gone through. So, of course, there's going to be certain areas that are not equal to others, but I think we feel that the state of our timber lands in the state of Minnesota are
certainly are
pretty competitive with the other states. The ecological classification system, making sure that we understand what our forests are made up and develop guidelines to maintain these stands, planting the right trees in the right places, things like that. Our goals are 140,000 additional acres under which of the state forests that we've identified, these natural plant communities are determined, and then identify the stands that must be planted following harvest and those being converted to new types based upon the ecological characteristics of that site itself. Moving on to cooperative forest. Sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Knute.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Meyer. On the native plant communities and the ecological classification system, are there discussions about the impacts of climate change and how those impact native plant communities, how management practices will adapt or shift, or whether or not that should be brought in to the... I'm just kind of curious because I know our forests are changing as a result of climate change and other factors, but I'm curious how that's discussed when you're doing the ecological classification system.
Madam Chair, Representative, the native plant community, the ECS process, doesn't directly look at that in particular. We do have staff in the department that are looking at that and what the succession of the forests will be or may be in the state of Minnesota and how best to adapt with that. So we are looking at that, but not through that process. I think I'm not sure if I've shown you a slide. I had a slide that we used in a presentation that showed the possible succession of the forested parts of the state moving into Canada within the next 150 years or so. You know, a lot of that is theory or there's research behind it, but, you know, it's hard to say what the timeline of that will be. But I can certainly talk with you more about our activities to date, not only on the forestry side of things, but dealing with the wildlife populations as well and some of the work that we've been doing on that aspect. So. Madam Chair, are there any other questions?
I'm sorry.
Moving on to page 4, cooperative forest management. This was an area that the legislature had directed us last session to recover our costs, or rather than do these forest stewardship plans for people at no charge, now we are to recover our costs. It does have some impact, but we're trying to do the best we can to maintain those costs at a low level and provide the services that people need to get these plans developed. Our forest conservation easement activities fall under this program as well. And our certified tree inspectors and communities with tree inspectors, some of our preventative work on disease, tree disease, emerald ash borer, things of that nature fall under this category as well, Madam Chair. The remaining category talks about our core support programs, our forest nurseries, forest health, utilization, marketing, resource assessment, information systems, land asset management, our timber harvest and forest management guideline monitoring. These are all activities we're trying to look at and manage most effectively as possible. We're currently undergoing an examination of our forest nursery program. We'll be able to come back and talk to you about that at some point in time, making sure that we're able to meet the demand out there, but also making sure that the private industries are able to also work effectively and efficiently as well. Last thing in this category on page 5 is our Sustainable Forest Resources Act implementation. And you can see this is to incorporate multiple perspectives on managing, using, and protecting our forests to achieve our economic, environmental, and social goals, site-level guideline development, landscape plan implementation, policy development, operations, and research are there. This is where the Forest Resource Council comes into play, where we're working with those members to try to help us, guide us in these activities, develop guidelines that incorporate the best available science, looking at the economic impacts of potential changes. Some of the outcomes we're talking about is select 4 priority issues and leverage $150,000 of non-state funding for the study of forest parcelization. That actually was done. We're working on that still, talking about those impacts. And also looking at our riparian forest management guidelines based upon the scientific review and making sure that they're evaluated for the economic impacts before adoption. Training on biomass activities and harvest guidelines ensure safe harvest and the application of those activities. Biomass is a new and emerging market for the timber industry, and it provides us multiple benefits, not only from the energy side of things and things like that, but it gives us a market for that intermediate timber stand improvement activity that we do. So previously, when we would do some of these thinnings, that material would be non-marketable. Now there's a market. People can receive some financial activity or some financial input on the other side of it as well, once this work, the timber stands are harvested or thinned out, leaving us with a healthier forest, more productive forest, and also a fuel source in the end as well. Madam Chair, that is a quick overview of the Division of Forestry. Are there any questions?
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry, I might have missed if any of this came up earlier, but one of the questions I have is about the health of the trees that are being cut down and the contaminants they may or may not incorporate as they are growing. There's been a little bit of discussion about that around the country. Is that anything that your department is looking at?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, so you're talking about potential, the actual...
Well, our trees are respiring, you know, in an atmosphere of that sometimes are very polluted. I think especially some of our urban forests. And there's been discussion about when that wood is burned and so on. Are we releasing things into the air that are part of the problem, or do they clean it up in a way that's not a problem? There's just, you know, I think there's, it's a question, and if you don't have anybody working on that, maybe it's something we could discuss. I'm just wondering if you have that as part of your...
Madam Chair, we could ask Mr. Tomlinson about that. I'm not sure if we have an answer or not.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Clark, Bob Tomlinson, the Assistant Director for the Division of Forestry. Your question relates to forest health. Everything we do is about forest health, Representative Clark, trying to improve the health and productivity of the state's forests so that they're resilient with relative to climate change, that their invasives are minimized, and so our efforts are to try and get in and do more management within the state's forest, and as a result, try and make them more healthy, not have them be decadent, not have them be as fire-prone as some other states have become, and not have them be as vulnerable to insect and disease problems as they have been. And so everything that we do around forest management basically relates to that forest health question. And I'm sorry for answering it in a very general term. You know, we certainly have scientists that could speak more specifically to some of the measures that we're doing, but I just wanted to be clear about that all the thinning that we do the timber harvesting, everything is relative to the forest health issue.
I'm sure maybe I wasn't very clear in my question, and maybe there's nobody looking at this. Maybe I just ask the department to get back to me to see if there is someone who's looking at this question. And Representative Portman was just saying that she understood my question, and her daughter is actually interested in this. I think it is a question that's more and more, and I don't know if you want to add to this, but it's the question of, you know, the trees in our environment are contributing to either, you know, they're living in a polluted environment, especially in our urban areas. What happens when they breathe in those pollutants? Are they then later, are they stored in a way that later they're released when they're, you know, certain maybe burned or other kinds of, you know, put into landfills, hopefully not too many landfills, but, you know, used in different ways on the land? So that's just a question, and whoever's looking at that, maybe you can just take this as a request that someone would look at it, and do you want to say?
I do, because this is exactly the Science Fair project my daughter did. She got equipment from Sedgwick Heating and Cooling down in Bloomington. They were the only people who called her back, and they have a little monitor, and you can put it in an area to monitor the air quality, and it measures toxics, and it measures carbon dioxide, and it measures oxygen and carbon monoxide. And my daughter put a little tree under a, you know, airtight container, and it measured the air toxics and the carbon dioxide in there over a period of 4 days, and then she compared that to a different plant. And, yeah, the plant eats the toxics. It can read that there's chemicals floating around in the air, and then when the plant has been in there a couple days, that it has ingested those. And that is an interesting question far beyond my daughter's scientific expertise at the age of 12. What happens to those toxics once they're stored in the plant? Are they converted? And there may be some scientists at the University of Minnesota who have the answer to that, but it is a good question for DNR.
I think there is some, it always feels like there's some gap between what the University of Minnesota is telling us about forestry and the operations of DNR to get our forests healthy so that they can be harvested to produce the jobs that folks are, and the income that folks are asking about. But I think that's a question that we're going to have to put off for another day. I mean, I think it's a major question, but we have diet. Can we be quick to this one?
Just real quick, Madam Chair, and Mr. Tomlinson, thank you, but one example of what you are doing is when you gave me a tour of up in, I believe it was Pine County, when we toured, where you were taking down a stand as we toured of, I believe they were jack pine that had suffered a disease, and you were harvesting them for market, but you were being more aggressive in the harvest because there was an invasive present there, and you were trying to protect the rest of the forest. I can't remember what that, I don't want to, as Mr. Meyer, I don't want to say wrong, but if you could just answer what that invasive you were dealing with in that example, and then that would be all I need.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, as I recall, that tour was up there in around sandstone country, and that was looking at a large pine stand where we had, as you're aware, as you're driving north along Highway 35W, there's a lot of planted pine and spruce on both sides and in the state forest up there. And a few years back, we had a significant outbreak of jack pine budworm that was killing off large acres of jack pine. And we were trying to get ahead of pine, and we were trying to get ahead of that in harvesting it and chipping up the residuals, the tops and things like that that went for biofuel, to the biofuel industry at the time, in order to prevent that from spreading. And I'm glad to say, I think at this point in time, that we have been able to kind of stop the spread of that, and it's a little better under control now. But that doesn't get to the question relative to the specific tree biology and how that works, and that's something that we'll have to get back to Representative Clark on. But okay. But I think what the comment that I was making, I was trying to make the point that, in general, forest health is paramount in the Division of Forestry's mission, and that's an example that Representative McNamara brings up.
I won't belabor the point here, but it's well established that plants can be used in phytoremediation ordinarily at contaminated areas, and I don't know what, you know, a Superfund site or whatever, but I just the forests in northern Minnesota, generally, we don't have issues up there with that. Now, the urban areas, there may be. I don't know. And when you do phytoremediation, yeah, you might end up with a toxic plant. So that's not unrealistic, but not for northern Minnesota right now, anyway.
Madam Chair, members, that completes the Forestry Division. I'm going to start on Parks and Trails, and with any luck, we might be able to get almost through this, if not completely through before the end. You can see the total appropriation for the Parks and Trails Division in 10 and 11 was $195,535,000. That includes direct statutory open appropriations. Of the $21.86 million in general fund that they do receive, approximately $420,000 was unallotted for 10 and 11. Of that, $289,846 in 10 and $291,500 in 11 was unallotted from the general management appropriation. Increased efficiencies due to the consolidation of the Parks and Trails Division accounts for most of this reduction, the ability to reduce these funds, combining activities, fleets, things of that, brought our operating costs down. Also, $90,000 has been reduced in our archaeological services activities. These activities have been shifted to the actual work that is being done through our archaeological work. For example, the Lake Chetek Park restoration activity that we have going on, the archaeological activities are actually funded through the dollars appropriated for that program. Most of our archaeological activity deals with new or redeveloped, or when we're in and mostly related to park activities. When we have, before we reconstruct or we rebuild a campground, for example, we are required by law to do an archaeological evaluation of the site. So we're directing these costs to those activities, since they are part of those development costs. The other part of this, Madam Chair, we've already talked about. Let me back up one second. $40,000 annually came from the Wild and Scenic River Program. We've shifted this work to other field staff. It's monitoring and inspection of Wild and Scenic River easements. As our field staff is in the field on the river, we've instructed them to keep an eye out or to be watching for encroachments, any kind of work that may not be permitted in the area. So it's just taking advantage of across divisional activities that we're cooperating on. For example, when our fisheries staff are out on the St. Croix River doing fisheries work, we've instructed them to make sure that they're watching for infractions, violations, and things like that. It's an activity we need to do more of, especially in Emerald Ash Borer activities and things like that. We're going to be talking about the authorities that will be given to do cross compliance with the Department of Commerce and Department of Agriculture on firewood labeling. As our staffs are out there, you know, we're asking them, hey, when you go to the gas station to fill up the car, if they have firewood, make sure it has a label on it and let us know. It's just those types of things we need to do more of.
I think we're diverting, however, from the reduction in monitoring and inspection of wild and scenic river easements. One of the biggest issues we have to deal with is we're purchasing more and more easements and more land, and we don't have the money to monitor or manage the lands. It's a fundamental problem that this committee has to address. I am not opposed to purchasing more land. In fact, I would like us to do so. However, we have to set up a system, because we're going to have further budget cuts. And so we're at a collision course right now. So here, members, is just one of those indications of one of the things we've got to deal with.
Madam Chair, the Wild and Scenic River situation, or the Wild and Scenic River program, is a little bit different than the other easement programs that we have. And
I understand, but you don't have money to monitor the easements we have right now. Period. And the outcome of Minnesotans purchasing easements is that they want that land protected, and that's what they're paying for. We have no idea whether they're getting that outcome, because nobody's checking up on it. That's a problem.
Madam Chair, we can talk about that more in the future.
No, it's a problem right now. it's a big budgetary problem.
Madam Chair, depending on the type of easement, there are funds appropriated. Forest legacy easements, for example, we appropriate funds through those programs to do that monitoring and enforcement. Trout stream easements, for example, only provide us access to the river for fishing. We have no management or development authority there. So we have to go back to the specific type of easement that we purchase, what rights we purchase from that landowner, and deal with that and monitor for that aspect of it. I agree we do need to do a better job, but I don't think we are completely falling down on the job. Moving forward then, the general fund reduction that took place within Parks and Trails, we talked about already, dealing with our special recreational activities that they're picking up through the Division of Forestry. The remaining funds, $194,694,000, are split up through several different categories. In the area of outdoor recreation, represents about 42% of those funds. $81 million focuses the activities on state park and rec area system. You can see our outcomes are providing comprehensive visitor services to the over 900,000 overnight guests and 800 million plus day use visitors.
How does that compare with the year before?
Up about 10 or 15%, Madam Chair.
Up about 10 or 15%?
I'll get you the specific number. It is our overnight guests are way up because we had a great summer season. The weather was nice. 4th of July fell on a good day. It was part of the weekend, things like that. And the day use visitorship was up as well. So
one might also think it had something to do with the economy and people staying closer to home. I mean, we all have predicted that kind of last year. In your park surveys, were people satisfied with their visits?
Madam Chair, members, our usership surveys, the satisfaction ratings are up. They're very satisfied in most cases. I think we talked about some of that last year as well, but the services that we're providing, the experiences that people are having, people are satisfied with. The geocaching opportunities, for example, some of the recreational activities that we're providing for people, they're very popular. So, and with the added support of the legacy funds for the naturalist programs and things like that, we look forward to doing a lot more of that in the future. That brings me to a point. This document does contain outcomes from the legacy funds as well. I'm not going to go into them in specifics, but just to kind of keep it all in one place for our users, our customers to see, we're tracking it all on this one document. So we'll put in the information that Representative Anderson was talking about as well.
I think the outcomes here that we're looking for, if are number of visitors, are they happy? Is that kind of it? And the fact that the number of visitors is going up is a good sign.
Madam Chair, a couple other highlights here. The outcomes are to leverage 130,000 hours of volunteer time for campground hosts and other activities. Reducing our fleet costs by 2%. We're looking across the department to reduce our costs for fleet, paper, pencils, whatever we have. The things that we can control within the best abilities to provide other additional dollars to our conservation and core missions and goals. One of the things that we've done in Parks and Trails is purchase 15 electric cars that we use throughout the system. Actually, you see some of them driving around here that the Department of Administration has now as well to reduce emissions and also operate more effectively and efficiently.
Mr. Meyer?
Yes?
It is 10 o'clock. We are going to continue this. I am particularly interested in enforcement when we get down there in very specific outcomes, particularly for wetland monitoring when we get to that. So if you could be prepared to talk about that when you get here, because that was one of the outcomes that this committee dwell on, if I could use that word. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to move the minutes of the February 16th meeting for approval.
The minutes have been moved for February 16th, have been moved for adoption. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The minutes are adopted. Members, some of you may not have been here when we started. We are probably going, almost surely, going to be working nights next week. So I'm accordingly. We'll get out times as soon as we can. Meeting adjourned.